everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to bring you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to a new show every Wednesday at noon on the Heritage Radio Network, and you can always find us at restaurantguysradio.com or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
Dynamite.
Boom. Remind me of JJ in Good Time.
He was dynamite.
He was dynamite, yeah. Today's topic, we're going to talk all about cocktails today. We've got Brian Miller coming on the show in just a little bit. He is one of the foremost experts in the country on tiki drinks, which are super important.
And much more importantly, one of my favorite bartenders in the world.
Yeah, and he's also a really nice guy. Yep. We've known him for a long, long time, and he's a great bartender, as well as just a super smart guy who knows a lot about cocktails. I would like to talk about a non-tiki cocktail to begin with. I would like to talk about the Bloody Mary. There was a great article that we ran across, that actually you ran across and called to my attention in Bon Appetit recently. And I think with the new year, Bloody Marys are front and center. And we have a new Bloody Mary on our menu that I'm super excited about.
Right. You mentioned before.
On the show. That
you stole from somebody in London.
Borrowed. We're using, with permission from Agostino Peroni at the Connaught Hotel, we're using his Bloody Mary, which is a very elegant evening Bloody Mary. But this article was really terrific in that it talked about how people have always taken license with Bloody Mary. So the classic old take on a Bloody Mary was the Bloody Bull. And the Bloody Bull was a Bloody Mary with beef stock in it. We did a Bloody Bull years ago.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
We took a lamb demi-glaze and put just a little ounce of lamb demi-glaze in a Bloody Mary. Very good.
And let's face it, meat makes almost everything taste better.
Tomatoes and meat, come on. And some of the upgrades they talk about in this particular article I think are terrific. Pepperoncini is a possible upgrade. Spicy dill berries, like the preserved pickled, not berries, beans.
I was going to say.
No berries. No berries in the Bloody Mary. Spicy dill beans, like spicy preserved beans. I'm seeing them a lot.
I see a lot of, and actually there's even a commercial one available now, like a pickled green bean.
Yeah.
That's available commercially, and you can buy jarred in some of the specialty stores. Really, any of those pickled vegetables like that are great in a Bloody Mary.
Well, and blue cheese stuffed olives were big for a while in martinis mostly, but blue cheese stuffed olives work really well, and there are a lot of places that have almond stuffed olives and all sorts of different kinds of stuff.
I don't think I want blue cheese in my Bloody Mary. Sorry. I give that one a no vote.
All right.
You get the no from me on that
I'll take it out of here.
Actually, Bon Appetit gets the no vote from me on that
No, they talked about having garlic stuffed olives. They didn't talk about blue cheese stuffed olives.
See, now you're talking my language, literally.
Exactly. Okay. We're going to make a point with this overall, but I like all the different variations on the Bloody Mary. I'm a big fan, by the way, of... you must have celery seed in a Bloody Mary. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people put celery salt in there, which is good and has a place, but celery seed in a Bloody Mary, that's just...
I will tell you, the garnish that is on top of the new Bloody Mary that we're doing, doing some kind of celery bitters or something on top there, so you really the celery comes out. I mean, I know we're doing a celery foam,
right.
but you can easily add like a celery bitters or something on
yep.
top of your Bloody Mary, and I just think having that in my nose as I'm drinking the Bloody Mary is one of those, flavors that I really want to see in a
And also there. People like the crunch of the pepperoncini or the the dill beans. Radishes are another big one, especially long radishes are quite popular. Caper berries, I love caper berries, and I love them in a Bloody Mary. Hard-boiled egg, haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, this would be a first.
Haven't seen that one yet. I don't know how you fit it in the glass. I don't know where the heck it goes.
Well, you do the hard-boiled egg, the bacon, and the Bloody Mary. Boom, you're done.
You mean you have a salad? they're suggesting quail eggs, which you can hard boil and then peel and then put on a skewer. So I guess that's how you can make that work. Beef jerky?
That sounds actually pretty good.
Yeah, it's okay.
That Bloody Bull kind of flavors all over again. You got a little salty from the beef jerky. That might make sense.
Just be careful about something, though. Pick one or two of these.
Mm-hmm.
Don't make a soup. or make a soup. That's the other option is make a gazpacho.
Right, make a gazpacho and then you're there.
There you are. Anyway, well, I hope you've enjoyed our little
Bloody Mary
meditation on the Bloody Mary. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking with Brian Miller about all things tiki and nothing Bloody Mary-esque. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys on the Heritage Radio Network and on RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis. Our guest today is an old friend, one of the best bartenders in the country. Brian Miller hosts Tiki Mondays at Lani Kai in New York City.
Hey, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. You know, we should have had you on the show by now. I don't know why we haven't, because we've known each other for a long time in many iterations of the career of Brian Miller, and you are one of my favorite bartenders.
Thank you very much.
Well, you're quite welcome. And you are, I would say, one of the top experts in New York City, if not in the country, on an increasingly important area of cocktails, which is the tiki drink.
I wouldn't call myself an expert, but I am extremely passionate about it.
I would like you to name me five people in New York who are know more about tiki than you do, who are behind the stick.
Richie Picado, certainly. Giuseppe Gonzalez would be another one of the guys at Painkiller. Probably any of the bartenders at Painkiller. Julie Reiner certainly knows a lot. Probably Lulu Gonzalez at Painkiller. Trying to think who else. There's other guys that are out there that are people that are passionate, and through Tiki Mondays, I've had the great fortune of working with a lot of incredible bartenders.
All right. So what our listeners now know about Brian Miller is something that Francis and I have known for a long time. He is modest.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't think you'd get to five, but it was a great segue into talking about Tiki Mondays. Lani Kai is a cocktail bar in New York City, and it's a great one. Let's talk about what you do on Tiki Mondays, because I think this is fabulous, and it speaks to not only the emerging importance or the increasing importance of tiki drinks overall, but how the bartender community is sort of working now. Talk to us about Tiki Mondays and the guest bartenders you have on Monday nights at Lani Kai.
Well, it started like just before Tails. I think it was the week before Tails was the first one that we did. It was an idea that Julie Reiner proposed to me. I left Death & Company. I'd been away from there for about a year, and Julie just was like, Brian, people want to see you behind the bar, and they want you making the drinks that you're most passionate about, which is tiki drinks. And she was like, well, why don't you, you know, we'll have Mondays with Miller. And I was like, okay, yeah, let's just call it Tiki Mondays. And it was just something that she gave me the ultimate platform. She was I basically had three rules. I was like, I want to make tiki drinks, I want to dress however I want to dress, and I want to listen to whatever music I want to listen to. And she's like, no problem. And I was like, great. I mean, how often does a bartender get a chance to work behind a bar making the drinks that they want to make without the responsibility of being a manager or anything like that? So it's probably one of the greatest gifts I've ever been given in this business.
Well, one of the things that I think is really fascinating and that you've laid out what Tiki Mondays is overall. So you, in classic Brian Miller style, decide to make this every Monday night. I get an email from you every week talking about who is going to be your guest bartender working with you behind the stick on Monday nights at Lani Kai. How did that come about? And how do you pick the bartenders that are going to be with you, which are, by the way, some of the other best bartenders in the country every Monday night?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really fortunate to have the people that I do work behind that bar. It's essentially, I picked my first mate because we do kind of, it's like a pirate tiki theme where we dress up like pirates and listen to rock and roll, a lot of Keith Richards and Rolling Stones. And essentially what I did, the way I proposed this idea was I just sent out an email blast to a lot of my friends in the industry, East Coast, West Coast. Sometimes if I know people are going to be in town that time, I'll shoot them an email and see if they want to come and do a Monday for me. And I've been fortunate enough. I mean, right now, here it is 2012. I'm booked solid until the middle of April with bartenders. And a lot of the times, it's just it's friends, it's bartenders within the industry. It's also sometimes tiki enthusiasts that we have here in the city. Like there's Joe Desmond who does the Rum Rum Room, and which is like a little bar that he has himself at home, and he just, you know, every once in a while he invites tiki files to come in and hang out, and they make tiki drinks. And then there's Adam Kolesar, who produces, he's the owner of the Brooklyn Orgeat Company, and he produces Orgeat for different bars, Lonnie Kai being one, Clover Club being another, Death & Company. And Adam's kind of like the official Tiki mascot of Tiki Mondays. He comes in every Monday. I send him the specs for all the drinks that we do. But he, you know, it was funny. Adam was the second guy I had there. He really wanted to do this, and I've already got him again for this year. But he came in. He had never bartended behind a bar before.
Huh.
And so when he did his first night, we were at the very end, we were sitting down having a late night dinner, and he was like, Brian, there was one point where there were so many people in the bar, he was like, I almost walked out. He was like, I was so scared. He was like, I had a deer in the headlights moment.
Isn't that the definition of being a bartender? Isn't that, don't we all get that moment?
This is, I mean, it's different for me too, because it's not a bar that has the doorman where it's like there's a set amount of people and that's it. It's like people can come rushing in, and we get different moments of like sometimes it's like 6 o'clock or even five. We open at six, but sometimes at like 5:45 we'll have people like ready to come in, and so it can be overwhelming at times, but there's always kind of, you know, ebbs and flows. There are times when it's really busy and then it slows down and then we get like a late night hit. And we started off, we were going to do this at just till midnight, and then things have just started to pick up. And I mean, I cannot say enough about how grateful I am for the people that do come in. I mean, for God's sake, it's a Monday night.
Like, yeah.
I really don't expect a lot of people to come in, but we get tremendous support from the people in the industry, and we picked up regulars from Lonnie Kai as well that come in. Julie's done a little promotion on her own menu of some Tiki classics that I provided for her, and she uses that as a selling ground. And then we also get brands to come in and sponsor nights, where they come in and we do a whole menu just for that brand, which has been really great. It's given brands lots of exposure, but it's also like opened me up to different rums, you know, and expanding my repertoire of drinks, as well as like kind of breaking down judgments that I may have about certain brands. And they're like, oh, maybe they're not that good. But then like I try it and I'm like, wow, this is really good. I mean, one of the more difficult brands, I mean, we've done nights where we've done Tiki Scotch drinks, you know, by Famous Grouse. I had Jim Meehan in and worked with Banks Rum, which I thought I was really scared about working with. I was like, oh, God, am I going to be able to make drinks with this? Turned out great. I've done nights with tequila as well.
Well, let's take a step back, Brian, and I think that people sort of have an idea of tiki drinks, and until, I don't know, maybe 5 or 7 years ago, my knowledge of tiki drinks came – my visual association with tiki drinks came from the Brady Bunch episode where they went to Hawaii.
For the longest time, tiki drinks were kind of just a goof.
Yeah, funny mug and all. Why don't we let's talk to people about what makes a tiki drink, where it comes from, and how it's sort of popping up in American cities that really don't have a lot to do with Polynesian islands.
Drinking out of a cup with a face on.
It's fun. The basic foundation of Tiki is these drinks are fun. And we wouldn't be where we are today without Jeff Beach Bunbury. I mean, he's kind of the Indiana Jones of Tiki culture and has, like, unearthed all these amazing drinks and all the different books that he's done. And certainly, some of his books, like Sip and Safari, have also taught us about the gentlemen that were behind it, not just Don the Beachcomber and Trader Vic, but some of the bartenders like Bob Esmino, Mariano Lucadine, obviously Ray Buen at the TKT and his family that runs it now.
So where did Tiki originate?
Well, it originated it started in like 1934 was when Don the Beachcomber opened his first place. But it started with kind of like soldiers coming home from war, and having visited different Polynesian cultures, and they kind of, you know, they liked it, and it was a way to kind of escape. That's the one thing that I really like about Tiki lore is that it's all about escapism. It's about like you know, when you had the bars, when Trader Vic and Don the Beachcomber had their bars, these were places where people could go. Like, they come from the suburbs, you know, husbands and wives. They get away from the kids. They come into these bars, and they just escape their lives. You know, it was also a place, it was certainly Don had his connections with Hollywood, and so there were a lot of celebrities that would come in there, like, after shoots, after movie shoots, to hang out and kind of, like, escape and be away from everyday life just for a few moments.
So,
and it was also...
Well, so we talk about it's starting in you know, island culture and trying to bring some of that island culture back in a little bit of escapism. And, you know, we all – my association of these drinks or tiki overall is it's a little bit kitschy. You know, everything is a little bit tongue-in-cheek. And there are serious tiki drinks, and it's to be taken seriously and is being taken more seriously. But there's always a little bit of tongue-in-cheek when you're drinking out of a mug shaped like a totem pole. Isn't there?
Oh, certainly. I mean, to me, that's kind of the allure of it, is there is a certain amount of... I think these drinks are just as complex and deserve just as much respect as any of the pre-prohibition and classic cocktails out there. I mean, you can say what you will about, like, oh, yes, it's in a tiki mug and it's got a bunch of juices in it. It was like there's a true art in taking, you know, several different rums or several different spirits within one drink, blending them all together and being able to taste every single flavor that's in that drink. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at it now, it's like we're in a culture where it's like you got to go to a bar class and you're doing this and you're doing that. Don the Beachcomber wasn't a classically trained bartender at all. This was a guy who, like, traveled the world. Like, you know, one of my favorite sayings is from Don the Beachcomber, which is, what one rum can't do, three rums can, you know, which is where you get the zombie. And it's such an incredible blend of three different kinds of rum from three different kinds of three different countries. And it's amazing. It's one of the things, too, that having worked with with all the great bartenders that I have at Tiki Mondays, is like these guys come in thinking that, like, oh, man, I'm just going to throw some juice and stuff together. And they're like, this is a lot harder than I thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah. And with Tiki Mondays, I also try to push the envelope of, like, I don't know if there really is, like, a specific definition of what a tiki drink is, but I try to expand it. Like, any, you know, most of the time people think it's just rum and juice all messed together. But I think you can use different spirits. I think you can do boozy tiki drinks.
Now,
I think, you know, it can be stirred.
So let's talk about what makes, in your opinion, a tiki drink a tiki drink. And I think of crushed ice in a tall glass, and I think of swizzles, and I want you to talk about swizzles and the swizzle stick in a minute and the different classical types of tiki drinks. What do you think makes a tiki drink overall? I mean, a Manhattan is not a tiki drink, right?
No, not classic.
Right. So what makes a tiki drink a tiki drink?
Honestly, I would go back to Sven Kirsten, who's written a lot of tiki books about the tiki culture. And I think what makes a tiki drink is the environment in which you're in. I mean, you want to, it should be a fun, lively crowd. You know, I think the environment, having bamboo or tiki idols in it, listening to tiki music. I mean, the environment that makes you feel like you're being transported somewhere else.
Brian?
That is the most important thing, I think, about tiki drinks. Because you can have different... I think anything with rum kind of gets you in that tiki mode.
Brian?
You know, rum just has that escapist mentality to it. I mean, I probably, if you cut my arm, I would probably bleed molasses.
Brian, you probably don't have a grass skirt that's big enough for me.
Oh, wow. Thank God.
Probably not, but you know what? We could.
But the thing about grass skirts is you can always tie two of them together.
You make two grass skirts. So, there you go.
Yeah, but you know, unlike a kilt, you can wear underneath.
That's because it's just grass, really.
Sometimes it's encouraged.
I'm not a grass skirt kind of kind of person, but I definitely am a sarong person. I wear my sarong pretty much year-round, and most of my friends and neighbors have seen me either outside or in my house in a sarong. So, and I think that's one of the most comfortable pieces of clothing I've ever worn.
It's not comfortable when I'm around it. It's not comfortable for me when you wear it, but I'm glad that you're comfortable in it. And you are fetching in it, after all. No, but see, now, but let's talk about drinks themselves. There are certain drinks that no matter where you serve them, and we serve swizzles in the cocktail bar at Catherine Lombardi, and in the Italian-American restaurant with Frank Sinatra playing, it doesn't embrace the whole tiki environment externally, but it's still a swizzle, and that's still a tiki drink. Well, let's talk about some of the classic forms of tiki drinks that you would find. We see rum as a defining characteristic. We see fruit juice as a defining characteristic. Certainly tropical fruits and tropical fruit juices and flowers as a defining characteristic. Talk to us, what besides a swizzle should we be looking for makes something a tiki drink?
I think garnishes also play a really big part in tiki drinks, because it's always like Bum says, he's like, you know, if you think you put enough garnish on a drink, you should add some more. And that's what kind of happens in tiki drinks. And you get really crazy, and, you know, lots of fire. You know, you can have lime shells, you know, with a little 151 rum in it, lit on fire. We've done... At Tiki Mondays, we get a little crazy because we end up spending our nights. Sunday night is a prep night for us, and so I come in with my guest bartender, and we basically hash out the menu all on Sunday night. And we've done some crazy things, like I think once we did kind of a take on a rum cow, essentially it's like rum and milk, but we added some other things to it, some blue curacao. I think blue curacao is definitely is kind of a tiki quality.
Oh, yeah.
It's part of the tiki culture, but we did a flaming absinthe soaked Oreo in a drink. My friend James Menite helped me come up with that idea. I did a drink called the Donny Karabatsov from Vatsos from Donny's character from what's the movie, The Big Lebowski, and it was a sling. That I created a bowling alley on top of the drink using a orange twist, some colored toothpicks, and a cherry. So it looks like a bowling ball headed for three pins on top of the drink.
The kitsch that I was talking about earlier.
And when you said too much garnish is not too much garnish, you really meant it, huh?
Yeah, no,
and you have fun with it, because sometimes, you know, in the classic cocktail culture, there isn't a call for a lot of garnishes or a lot of elaborate garnishes, and sometimes rightfully so. I mean, I'm a disciple of the Phil Ward school of garnishing, where it's like, look, if the drink doesn't need it, I don't put it in it.
Yeah, we agree completely.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes that's and that works. You know, sometimes people will be like, wow, there's nothing to this drink. I'm like, well, you should smell it. You know, much like a mint julep, you need to smell these drinks.
You know, it's funny, in the current arena of bartending, if we want to tweet about a drink, or if we're getting written up about a drink in a publication, and somebody wants to, there are drinks that people really like, drinks we've started here that have really taken off, and people want to write about it, and then when they come to take a picture, we're like, okay, put a garnish on it.
Right.
And then when you come to the bar and you order it afterwards, it doesn't really have that garnish on it. But if you ask, I'll give it to you.
But what I'll tell you when you start talking about garnishes, Francis and I were judging a cocktail competition, and somebody made a Bloody Mary, and in that Bloody Mary, the garnish was a BLT, and I was like, best drink garnish.
Oh, that's right. It was on a stick. It was a little BLT on a stick in the Bloody Mary. It was amazing.
Best drink.
See, that's cool. I mean, that's one of the things that Tiki has kind of opened me up to, is like, I'm into the garnish game. Like, when I do setups for Tiki Mondays, you know, I'm like, guys, okay, we need to step up our garnish game. My bar back, Ryan, he's always like, all right, Miller, so what's the garnish, you know, what are we doing for garnish this week? Like, you know, what are we lighting on fire? I mean,
what are we lighting on fire?
Yeah, I mean, I got that from Richie Boccato when Richie worked with me. He's like, Brian, he's like, I only have one rule. And I was like, what? He's like, I want to light shit on fire. I'm like, okay, cool, man. I'm like, we'll totally do that. And I was like, I only have one rule, too. And he's like, what's that? I'm like, you have to wear this pirate scarf. Like,
all right, so you know what? We're going to take a quick break, but I want to say that I think, would you agree that maybe the one rule should be that the garnish on your drink should be as loud, at least as loud as the Hawaiian shirt that you're wearing.
But that, absolutely.
Would you say? Kind of a similar aesthetic there.
Yes.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment. We're going to talk more with Brian Miller about all things tiki in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on the Heritage Radio Network and on restaurantguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of The Restaurant Guys Radio Show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to restaurantguysradio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. Our guest is Brian Miller, and he's been really self-effacing earlier. He is one of the top experts in the country on tiki. Brian has been called by Robert Plotkin in a recent Time Out article the Zen Master of Tiki. So, Zen Master, I've trumped you in your humility there and established your credibility despite yourself. I want to talk about tiki overall and where it's kind of coming around in culture, because people are really embracing it. Really is the current most important trend in cocktail culture among, you know, developed cocktail areas of the nation. Would you say that's correct?
Yeah. I hope it's not a trend, because to me a trend means like it's going to die sometimes.
Oh, so, no, see, I think the cocktails coming back overall is a trend. It's where things are going. I don't think that means it's a transient trend. I think it's but I think it's something it's a movement that's growing.
I think it's great that people are embracing the fun of tiki.
That's
part of the fun of cocktails. And what that tells me is people are taking cocktails and they're not thinking so hard about them that they're not fun anymore.
Yeah.
You know, when you start talking about tiki, that means, hey, I want the fun in my cocktails.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's a very customer oriented cocktail movement, because not always am I going to sit there and explain the bitters in the drink or what Amaro I've used or where this whiskey or rum came from. It's like I put a drink in front of a person and be like, cool, enjoy it. Like, don't listen to me ramble on about tiki history or a cocktail.
No, that's
history.
That's why you tune in
the company you're with.
It's why you tune into the radio show, so you can ramble on about it here and then go to the bar and drink. See? You can do your homework and then you get to drink more. You know, it's funny. I remember a mutual friend of ours, Dushan Zarek, once said to me, he said, you know, the world is a little too full of too many bartenders that know how many hairs Jerry Thomas had in his mustache and, you know, have lost a little bit of the fun of the whole thing. And I thought that was really kind of insightful.
I think Dushan is a perfect person to say that.
This goes back to something that's talked about in the article, and you sort of weighed in on this issue, is the use of the term mixologist and bartender. And I think for a while people embraced mixologist to say, hey, listen, I'm not just behind the bar opening bottles of beer and handing them to you and making sours with sour mix out of a gun. And then I think people got a little too focused on the mixology, which is an old term that's come into fashion again. And people say, well, I'm not a mixologist, I'm a bartender. And I think that both terms hold sway, and I think that bartending is the larger thing that you need to be, and some bartenders are better mixologists than others or more mixologists than others, and there are bartenders who just open beers and make gin and tonics, and they're bartenders. And then there are bartenders who are mixologists, who are my favorite bartenders, and then there are mixologists who aren't very good bartenders, and they're my least favorite kind of bartender. What do you think about that use of the term mixologist?
Well, I think you can be both. I mean, this is kind of a hot button subject amongst bartenders. I think one of the best things that I've ever heard described in this argument is Joaquin Simo of Death & Company told me once. He goes, Brian, he's like, if all our friends just had to pour beers and shots, half of us would be unemployed. Because I do think that people tend to get a little caught up in what they're doing rather than what the customer wants. I mean, Gary Regan has always preached, he's like, this is the service industry, people. Don't right. forget that. It's supposed to be about the customers. And Alex Day and I have had discussions about mixologists versus bartenders. And I think when it comes down to it, we're probably a little bit of both. I mean, you have to be able to, I mean, in this environment now, it's like it's all about creating drinks. I think sometimes customers have this child at Christmas time mentality of, hey, this is great. What's next? Oh, my God, this is fantastic. What's next? It's like they never just like, wow, this is a fantastic drink. I think I'll have two of them.
Right, right.
Very, very rarely does that happen. And when it does, you're like, ah, thank God, I love this person. But I think, like, a mixologist is someone who can create drinks, who definitely has a creative vibe, is very artistic, there's a craftsmanship to what they do. A bartender is, as I was told years ago, is like 90% of being a bartender is running the bar, is making sure, taking care of crowd control, taking care of your customers. My belief is I want my customers to feel better when they leave than when they came in. Like, that's my ultimate goal. I mean, we are throwing a party as bartenders every night. It's not a raging drunken festival or anything like that, but it's bars are supposed to be places where people can either, one, if they've had a really bad day, they can either, like, forget their sorrows, or they may need someone to, like, talk to, you know, because I'm always kind of hesitant. I'm like, do I talk to this person? Do I not? Like, you know, you try to feel out the mood of a person behind a bar. Like, that's what a bartender does. Well, so I think a bartender and a mixologist kind of tries to balance both.
You know, Brian,
drinks as well as taking care of a customer.
Brian, one of the things I think that happened when bartenders became craftsmen again, which is something I don't know that we were for a long time. I think you kind of divided into these two groups, and you could be a craftsman and be a bartender, but a lot of the craftsmen were like, you know, there are great chefs out there who are aloof and temperamental, and
mm-hmm.
they're great craftsmen, and that's okay because they're a chef and they're in the
kitchen.
They're
in the kitchen.
Exactly. But
right.
you can't be aloof and temperamental and be a bartender. That's not – so you have this – a great mixologist still is a bartender no matter how you slice it. So aloof and temperamental, just – they're not acceptable characteristics for that job, period, end of story. So for me, yes, you can be a great mixologist, but by definition, if I'm going to call you a mixologist, you already are a bartender.
Well,
you know, bartender's the first rung of being a great mixologist.
Yeah, I mean, I think in today's environment, it's like the mixologist is a term that gets bandied about through blogs and magazines and newspapers and stuff like that. And I just think it's an overinflated sense of self.
You know,
I mean, we are pushing the last legal drug. Let's not overanalyze our importance here in society. I mean,
hey.
People, you know, when we were at Pegu, when I was at the Pegu Club, when we all first met, you know, it's like, oh, it's a mixologist. You guys are like rock stars. It's like, you know what? I saw the Police on stage at Madison Square Garden. Those guys are rock stars.
I'm
a bartender.
Right, we bartend for 50, not 70,000.
Well, but hold on
a
second. Hold on a second, though. You are the Zen master of tiki. We can't forget that.
And Brian,
that's Robert's artistic. That's him going probably a little too far. I love Robert, and I really wanted to thank him for that article because I think he did an amazing job and let me say some of the things that I really have been wanting to say to people, whoever gets that newsletter or whatever.
Hey, Brian, and don't undersell caffeine as the last legal drug. We still got one more barrier to overcome.
Well, I want to ask you, I want to take just the last little segment of the show here, and I want to analyze a drink down and explain to people what a swizzle is, because we've heard the term swizzle stick, and people don't realize that there are actual swizzle sticks, and, you know, bartenders are very proud of their swizzle sticks.
Yes, we are.
And some of us have bigger swizzle sticks than others, but it's not the size that counts, it's the size of the drink. So
Talk to us about a swizzle, what a swizzle is, where it came from, and swizzle sticks and all that stuff, and what a good makes a good swizzle.
Well, the swizzle, actually, the technical name for it is called the lele, and it's a type of tree, usually, I think, found in Martinique, and I may be wrong in saying this, but I believe it's kind of an endangered tree. Because I know swizzles have become a little bit harder to find. Swizzle sticks have been harder to find here in the States. But it's essentially, it's a long, thin piece of wood that literally has like five prongs coming out of the end, which is essentially the way the branch itself grows. And what you do is when you buy them, you can snip off the ends of the branch and make it small enough to fit in, say, like a Pilsner glass or whatever, or a highball glass, whichever glass you're going to use to swizzle a drink in. And it's funny, it's like not a lot of people know that it's called the lele. I mean, I was in St. Lucia trying to find a lele because it was actually Richie Bacata who like first introduced me to leles, and he's like, oh, they have them down here. It was like, you can buy them and you can get different sizes. Like, if they're thicker wood, that's for more like punches, and the thinner ones are for cocktails. And I was walking through a market and I was like, excuse me, I'm looking for a lele. And the woman was like, oh, you want a lele, son? Yeah, come over here. You know, and the next thing you know, throughout the whole market, everybody's like, get the white boy a lele. He wants a lele. And I was like, oh my God. And I get on a plane, and I have, you know, like a handful of leles that I wanted to give out to friends, because at the time, this was like four or five years ago, there weren't a whole lot of leles around. And so, like, when we got them at Pegu Club, and then we got them at Seth and Company, it was like, oh, man, everybody wanted to do a swizzle. And for me, like, the first ones are like the Queen's Park swizzle, and then the offshoot of that is a High Park swizzle, which essentially one is a version with rum, the other is a version with gin. And basically what they are, because I can't make a mojito to save my life. I've never been able to make a good one, but a Queen's Park swizzle is essentially, it's a mojito with benefits. It's lime, it's sugar, it's rum, and then you drizzle the top with Angostura and Peychaud's bitters. And they look beautiful.
So
I mean, it's...
Talk about when you make these drinks. You put a lot of crushed ice into a very tall glass. You put the swizzle stick. You put in the layering ingredients, and then you swizzle them by turning your swizzle stick, running it between your hands, swizzling it inside the glass, which gets it very, very cold. And
right.
Our swizzles usually layered, right?
Yeah, they're layered, but it's not something. It's not layering like with a spoon or anything like that. The drink looks a lot more difficult and intricate than it really is. Essentially what you do, you know, using these ingredients, and for me, it's like the Queen's Park swizzle originated in a hotel in Tahiti. And essentially what it is like, you know, you put some mint in the glass, and you don't always have to muddle it. Maybe I'll drop a muddler on it a couple of times. Otherwise, you know, the mint can become too bitter. Then I put lime juice in, two different kinds of sugar. For me, I use simple syrup as well as demerara to add just a little bit of texture and flavor to it. And then you throw whatever rum, you know, whether it's dark or light rum, in there. And then you give it a dry shake just to mix everything up, bruise the mint a little bit. And then you pour the whole thing into, let's say, like a Pilsner glass. And you make sure that all the mint is pushed towards the bottom of that glass. Then you add the crushed ice. You fill it up about halfway, and then you give it a little bit of a swizzle. And then you put a little more crushed ice, and you swizzle it some more. And it's one of those things where you kind of have to warn the customer when you give it to them, hey, be careful. Frost will build up on the outside of the glass, and if you don't be careful when you grip it, it'll slide right out of your hand. And so that has happened a couple of times. Death and Company, be like, oh, my God, this is so beautiful, and pick it up and then drop it. You know, and you're like, oh, my God, all my hard work just got, you know, fell on the counter.
Right.
But then, you know, then you top it off with more crushed ice, so it's kind of overflowing on the top. And then you take Angostura and Peychaud bitters or whatever bitters, depending on what kind of swizzle you're doing. And then you give a little slight swizzle on the top so the bitters kind of bleeds from the top towards the middle of the drink. And so you have the green of the mint on the bottom, and then let's say you're using white rum, then you've got white rum, then it's all clear to the middle, and then the top is kind of a combination of brown and orange, or brown and red from the Angostura and the Peychaud bitters. And then you know, like a mint julep, you put a big sprig of, a couple of sprigs of mint on top. And so it just looks really beautiful, and then you gently slide the straw in, you know, to try to maintain the three different layers of color. And it's just, it's a beautiful drink. It's like, I mean, for me, that's a mojito. Whenever somebody asks for a mojito, that's what I give them. And they're like, oh my God, you know, so it kind of,
it's like
makes you look more of like a rock star, like, oh my God, what's this? You it's know, like, and you're like, it's like a
mojito on steroids. Actually, you know, it's funny you mentioned that we don't have a lot of tiki drinks right now on our menu, although we're planning some more in the summertime. But the Queen's Park Swizzle you can actually get in the Cathal Lombardi Cocktail Bar. And you all out there in listener land, if you would like to go and get any other sort of swizzle from the Zen master of tiki, Brian Miller, you can visit Lani Kai in New York. It's at 525 Broome Street. That's between Thompson and Sullivan. It's worth visiting any time, but especially on Monday night when Brian's back there with who knows who making cocktails, and you should check it on out. We'll put that information up on our website at restaurantguysradio.com.
Hey, Brian, thanks very much.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Great having you on the show. I'm a little thirsty, so we're going to have to take a little quick break right now, although it's kind of early for a swizzle, isn't it?
It's never too early for a swizzle.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on the Heritage Radio Network and at restaurantguysradio.com. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis.
Francis, I wonder if any of our listeners noticed that when we interviewed a guy with the book on ocean currents and how they're affecting fish, that we don't know him. But, but whenever we interview the cocktail guy, that we almost always...
Oh, here's the...
Hey, here's a buddy. We've been friends for years.
Here's the tiki expert. We've known him for 20 years. Here's the...
Think any of our listeners have noticed that?
Here's the brewer. We've known him for a long time. Here's the winemaker. We've known him. Here's the environmental expert. I've read his book.
Whose book? I just got in the mail. I definitely think there's a bet towards that. Okay. I have to give the non-cocktail geeks this is the definitions part of the show.
Oh, the glossary. This is the glossary at the end of the show.
Yeah,
I think we needed to do that.
Okay. One of the terms that Brian used was a term called dry shake.
Yeah.
That's basically just when you have all the ingredients and you shake them without ice.
Or you do the twist.
Oh, awful. Yeah. But that joke could have been gone so much worse, so I'm,
okay,
happy.
All right, yeah,
I'm happy with the direction it went. And then orgeat. He talked about orgeat like everybody in the world knows what orgeat is. Orgeat is an almond syrup.
Because everybody in Brian's world knows what orgeat is.
That's exactly it. Everybody in Brian's world knows what orgeat is. But not everybody in the world knows what orgeat is. And I'm certain I missed a couple of others, but I figured...
Any questions, email us at francis@restaurantguysradio.com and mark at restaurantguysradio.com. Hey, there's one other thing I wanted to touch on is this whole mixologist versus bartender nomenclature. And I think I don't think it's silly because I think we're trying to – some people have taken themselves a little too seriously. Some people don't take themselves seriously enough. But, you know, a bartender is the whole job. You know, mixology is a part of the job
in some places. See, I'm going to disagree with you just slightly, and I said this, you know, something to this effect earlier. I think bartender – if you want to be a mixologist, you have to be a bartender. And there are too many people who are calling themselves mixologists that aren't bartenders, and that's not cool.
Or they're bad bartenders. The thing is, you can be a bad bartender and a good mixologist. You know, something occurred to me is that if there is, and you made a great point here, if there's a chef in the kitchen who is aloof and, you know,
temperamental.
Yeah.
Those are the words I used, aloof and
the waiter wants to punch the chef in the nose, but deals with it because it's his job, and then the waiter goes out and is happy to the customer. If you're the bartender... it's the customer that wants to punch you in the nose.
Right, and
see,
that doesn't work.
You can't do that.
That formula definitely doesn't work.
The waiter can want to punch you in the nose, but he gets paid to not do that, and, you know, your chef's got a knife. You know, so I think that's what it's all about. And bartenders have to have the whole experience, have to have that sixth sense about the bar, and a good bartender makes sure that you have fun. That's what it's all about.
A good bartender makes sure you have fun, and that's why this tiki craze is becoming a craze again, because it's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I hope you guys have enjoyed this last hour as much as we have. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys on the Heritage Radio Network and at restaurantguysradio.com.